Community is vital. That's something we believe here in the Vegan Chub Club, and also what our next guest stands by. If you've ever struggled with an eating disorder, health and wellness obsessions, body image disturbances, or other forms of perfectionism, then keep your earbuds in. Homebody Therapy, featured in HuffPost and Bustle, gives us a glimpse into these struggles. Feel free to check out at Homebody Therapy on Facebook or Instagram while you tune in with us today. Let's jump into the episode. Content warning: disordered eating, mental illness, treatment, and recovery. Hello, everyone, and welcome back to another episode. Today, I've got Jenny Wiener here, the founder of Homebody Therapy.
Hi, thanks for having me.
Jenny works with adults struggling with binge eating, orthorexia, body dysmorphia, and perfectionism. Can you tell us a little bit about yourself and what exactly you do as a therapist?
Yeah, absolutely. So like you said, I'm a therapist specializing in disordered eating and body image concerns. So that includes full-blown eating disorders as well as chronic dieting and just body image disturbances. I work with adults, like you said, and run both groups and individual sessions with clients.
Wow. And I'd love to just hear how you got started. Why was this your chosen path?
So like a lot of people in the eating disorders field, I have a history of disordered eating myself, which has included full-blown eating disorder. I was in and out of various levels of care and all different types of treatment for many years. And once I sort of got onto more solid ground in my own recovery, I just kept gravitating back towards a helping profession. I was working in a different field entirely, but ended up going back to school for social work. And once I found the Health at Every Size movement and the fat positive movement, the body positive movement, that really sort of moved my own recovery to a new level and really helped crystallize for me kind of the direction I wanted to go in with my own work and the types of people I wanted to work with.
Awesome. I know a few people with an eating disorder past history who have gone into social work. And I guess it's just like once you learn how to nurture yourself, you just feel so good. Maybe you want to nurture others. Would that be accurate to say?
I think that's definitely true. I think also a lot of folks with, you know, disordered eating, we tend to see people who are very giving of themselves, and that might be part of it too.
Yeah. Oh, that's so true.
Sometimes to a fault, but I think it makes sense that we sort of gravitate towards, helping others.
Yeah, definitely. Yeah, and in general, like, what better person to give some nurturing and advice than someone who's been through it themselves?
I do think that makes a difference. I mean, there are definitely a lot of really wonderful and skilled practitioners out there who, you know, maybe have not. Although, who amongst us has not dealt to some degree, right, with sort of the, like, effects of diet culture and white supremacy, which is all tied into it. So no one is fully immune, but I do think there is something different about working with a practitioner who has that lived experience, who really knows what it's like.
Sure, but I do hear what you were starting to say as far as, like, there is something to be said for that objective perspective that is purely clinical or purely scientific to help on that level. And some people respond better to that, maybe, and some people, myself, obviously, I guess, is more, like, you know, empathetic and emotionally attached to those things. Like, I would personally maybe work with someone who's been through that.
Right.
But there is that place for those clinicians who haven't. When did you become vegan?
So, let's see. I became vegetarian when I was 9. I just loved animals. I've always been obsessed with animals and still am. And announced one day I was going vegetarian, and then it was, I think, maybe 7 years ago or so that I realized I was kind of drawing the line at an arbitrary place, you know, still eating dairy and eggs and using some animal products, and there was this cognitive dissonance where I was like somehow rationalizing that, even though I knew deep down that those industries are really just as harmful. So yeah, I finally made that leap and have, yeah, been vegan since then.
Awesome. Was there anything that sparked your vegetarianism in the beginning, or was that just something that felt like it aligned with you?
Yeah, at the beginning, you know, I was so young, it really was just that, like, I really loved animals and couldn't really fathom eating them anymore. Over the years, that became a little more sophisticated. I started to understand, you know, the nuances and the implications of factory farming and all of that.
Yeah.
But yeah, it when I was a kid, it was really just like, loved animals so much and couldn't really make sense of eating them anymore. And I think my poor parents, you know, probably thought it was going to last like a couple weeks, like most things did when I was that age. And but I never went back to eating meat.
That's cool. Not a lot of people start so young. So that's, but it makes sense, you know? I mean, I think when young children know what's going on, you know, you don't really want
right.
to be involved in
yeah.
that.
And I was lucky to to have a family that was supportive and that was able to like accommodate that. You know, I had access to vegetarian foods and things, so was really lucky in that respect.
Mm-hmm. And not sure how much you know about the Vegan Chub Club community itself, but not only are they just a group of very sweet people, you all are so sweet, but there's a variety of just eating styles, lifestyles in this community. So some people we know are 100% vegan. Some people, you know, will eat honey or a little bit of dairy. So they're like a little bit vegetarian vegan. Some are just vegetarian. Some are totally pescatarian, transitioning into potential vegetarianism or veganism. And we welcome all of that here, as well as anyone who's fat positive or fat themselves, or even if they're straight sized and they're in the fat positive supporting community. So let's just jump right into, you know, what it is that you specialize in. And I have just a couple questions about that stuff that we've maybe touched on via email that we can elaborate on here. You mentioned that there's skepticism surrounding veganism in the eating disorder treatment community. Some of that, you said, it could be warranted, but also really alienates a lot of ethical vegans, making them feel ashamed or unwanted in the treatment spaces. Can you expand on that for everyone?
Yeah, well, I think there is sort of like a side eye that, you know, the treatment community gives to a lot of vegans because it's interpreted as this restrictive, you know, lifestyle and restrictive diet and way of eating. And, you know, understandably, as professionals, we are wary of restriction of any kind because restriction is really at the root of all disordered eating. Even binge eating disorder really is rooted in restriction. So anything that looks like restriction, sounds like restriction, you know, we're going to be a little bit wary of. And as, you know, those of us in the vegan community know, there are also a lot of people who sort of use veganism as a cover for maybe their disordered eating. And I don't mean that like maliciously or that it's, you
or
know,
accusatory.
No. It's, you know, it's a disorder. It's a mental illness. And someone with that is sort of drawn to behaviors, strategies that enable, you know, their disorder to continue. And veganism is a really, I think, appealing way to some people to try cutting out more foods. And
it does almost put people in this opportunity to put themselves in a box and kind of like separate themselves from things that they deem harmful, you know, relative to their disordered habits, is basically what you're saying.
Yeah, I think it really comes down to sort of the difference in motivations for going vegan, right? Like someone who really comes to it from an ethical perspective, really cares about animals and the environment, versus someone who already is struggling with disordered eating and diet culture and is looking for more ways to control their food, they might also appreciate the ethical side of it, but they're really sort of motivated by something else. And so I think that's where the skepticism in the treatment community comes from, is sort of trying to parse that out, because eating disorders are really sneaky. Mm-hmm. So it's not the person, it's, you know, I don't hold anyone personally responsible, it's the eating disorder. So there's sort of this skepticism, and historically what that's looked like is treatment centers not really accommodating, you know, vegan diets, outpatient providers maybe not, you know, refusing to work with clients if they, you know, are committed to staying vegan, or sort of pressuring them to give up their veganism. Mm. And so understandably, for someone for whom the ethics are really important, that's going to feel really alienating and unwelcoming.
Yeah.
So I think that's a really big problem.
And I mean, it seems also like people look toward veganism who may have disordered habits or eating habits. They look toward it almost as finding a solution to their eating disorder. And then when they find out that that's not working, I mean, you mentioned just now too, like that, especially if they're at the root, you know, at the core, an ethical vegan, that's such an internal struggle. And I'm sure there's so many people who deal with that. And is it true that the percentage of vegans with eating disorders is actually higher than the percentage of vegans that are just in the general population?
There aren't a lot of good hard statistics on that, but the sort of informal studies that have been done or polls indicate that. And I think that is important for us to acknowledge and to look at. But again, you know, in the health at every size community in particular, right, we always talk about correlation versus causation. And just because there's a higher association of that doesn't necessarily or at all mean that, you know, veganism causes eating disorders, or that it, you know, is that someone's more likely to have an eating disorder if they're vegan.
Right.
It's just a relationship we have to acknowledge and take a look at.
Right, for sure. From your end especially. And so to clarify that, we're not saying that most people who are vegans have an eating disorder. That's not what we're saying here.
Absolutely not. Absolutely not. Yeah, I think it's just that for someone who is maybe not, you know, really concerned about the ethics, if that person has an eating disorder, they are more likely to experiment with veganism than someone without an eating disorder who's not concerned with the ethics, if that makes sense.
Yeah, and that does make total sense. I mean, we've all seen people in the public eye or the vegan community who are vegan for a very long time, and then they are not vegan anymore, and they are promoting all these other, you know, I guess diets or dietary choices, and the vegan community for the most part is left like sad about that, mad about that, embarrassed about it, and confused. But I mean, I guess on a broader scale, like, veganism isn't for everyone, which is something we could segue into here, as far as, like, I know that when we spoke with Taylor Wolfram on season 4, she had mentioned something about sometimes, you know, in order to heal your history and your relationship with food, maybe you aren't encouraged or recommended to eat a totally vegan, quote-unquote, diet in order to heal that relationship. And is that something that you've run into, and can you elaborate on that for us?
Yeah, I think that's a really important point. You know, going vegan does require, right, like, somewhat more attention to what you eat, whether that's just checking ingredients, whether it is giving special consideration to certain nutritional principles. There are things that we have to just be a little more aware of to make sure that we're getting adequately nourished and, you know, getting everything we need. And for someone struggling with an eating disorder, that increased attention to what they're eating might not be helpful at earlier stages of their recovery. And that's totally fine. You know, I think as a professional, like, I'm always going to advocate for someone protecting their mental health first and foremost, and, you know, getting the care they need and the help they need. Veganism will always be there. You can always go back to it. I also encourage people in that stage to think about all the other ways that they can practice veganism, right? Or maintain a vegan lifestyle outside of food. Like, it's so, as we know, it's so much more than the food. And, you know, right. that it can be great to sort of focus your efforts elsewhere while healing your relationship with food, really, you know, experimenting with, like, full unconditional permission to eat anything. And once that really feels healed, sort of coming back to, like, those dietary restrictions. I know that's not a very popular opinion in the vegan community, but like you said, you have a really varied community, and I really think that's important, that we sort of stay open to everyone accessing this in whatever way feels, like, realistic and doable for them. So
absolutely. And I think the thing too, at the end of the day, I don't want to sound like my end goal is to just convert everyone to veganism, but of course that is part of the vegan movement, is to, you know, attain as much movement toward that goal as possible of the least amount of suffering. But that also includes the least amount of suffering to our fellow humans and to yourself. So whatever you need to do to get there, to be healthy and happy in mind and body is really what it sounds like home body therapy is all about.
Yeah,
too.
Absolutely. Yeah, so. There is no one right answer. And, you know, a lot of that work I do, you know, I work with people who are vegan, people who are not vegan, but for someone who's vegan or thinking about going vegan is, yeah, really exploring those motivation, you know, their motivations, and exploring what they need to heal. And that looks different for everyone.
Yeah. And when you say, like, the motivation, To me, it sounds like, you know, the why did I go vegan? And for some people, they need that graphic reminder, and to watch those films of, you know, animal slaughter and things like that as the why. And that goes back to the ethical veganism standpoint. But, you know, then there's other reasons why people start it. Or you can get hung up, I feel like, on when you first go vegan, all of a sudden you might drop a lot of weight and you feel like that feels so good, especially if you may have a correlation with any sort of mental illness or anything like that. It just feels like a reward almost. And veganism isn't meant to just be this, you know, I mean, yes, of course you can feel good that you're not harming as many beings and everything involved with veganism, but I mean, at the end of the day, yeah, if you start treating it like a diet, then it can become harmful.
Totally. And I mean, what you're really talking about is a harm reduction approach, which is so important because, right, anything that we make into all or nothing really runs the risk of, you know, becoming another diet, and makes it just really hard for folks to, it can make it hard for certain people to sustain in a, like, a healthy, loving way for themselves. So,
and personally, you know, I'm pretty pure in my own vegan journey as far as what I will and won't consume, but I wouldn't judge others for doing what's best for their mental and emotional health surrounding that relationship with food and body. Can you dive into a little bit about what, for people who may not really know, what eating disorders are, what you can help with? I mean, binge eating, you mentioned orthorexia and body dysmorphia, and then perfectionism surrounding eating. And I just pulled those terms from your website. I'm sure maybe you can work within a fluid range of things, but do you want to maybe, like, describe to us what each of those are?
Yeah, absolutely. So, you know, I work with all eating disorders, primarily work with, you know, binge eating disorder, anorexia, and bulimia, which the DSM categorizes as these separate things, but most people...
What is the DSM?
I'm sorry, the it's sort of the diagnostic manual of, like, all mental illnesses, so it's what we use to diagnose someone with an eating disorder or any mental illness. So the DSM is kind of the manual for diagnosing mental illnesses. And so it lists these, like, separate criteria for these different eating disorders as if they're these totally distinct things, when the reality is most people exhibit symptoms from a range of eating disorders. You know, at one point they might be really restrictive, at other times they might engage in binging or purging behaviors or compulsive exercising. So in reality, they're not always as clear-cut as the book sort of makes it out to be. Orthorexia is not yet an official diagnosis in the DSM, but it probably will be soon. And that is really the obsession with healthy eating and clean eating, which, as you can imagine, like, these days is pretty common and also intersects with certain segments of the vegan community. Body dysmorphia is a really intense preoccupation with the body. If it's just weight-related concerns, you know, those are typically associated with the eating disorder, but body dysmorphia is like an intense preoccupation with a part of the body or, like, features of your appearance that are really, it's really sort of disruptive to daily life.
Okay. I think I mistook what dysmorphia was when I first was hearing about it. I think I took that as maybe you see yourself and perhaps you are what is considered, and I mean, healthy is a vast range of definitions, but perhaps you look healthy, quote unquote, let's just say for the sake of this, but you see yourself as morbidly obese when really you are maybe more straight sized. I guess I just assumed body dysmorphia was like you through your eyes you saw things that were different than they are, and that is why you chose to restrict or do different habits. Does that play into it at all, or
that is one sort of manifestation? And of course, like you said, we can't actually tell anything about someone's health just by looking at them, but there can be this sort of experience in which, yeah, you're seeing something that's very different than reality. But again, if someone met the criteria for an eating disorder, they probably would not be diagnosed with body dysmorphia, because that is, like, better explained by the eating disorder.
Gotcha.
So those are, like, semantics. But yeah, that is another way that it can present.
And when you have perfectionism listed here, I'm assuming that correlates to eating disorder perfectionism. How so?
Yeah, you know, it correlates with eating disorders and just sort of generally in people's lives. There can be this sort of clinical level of perfectionism in which someone's standards are just so impossibly high for themselves that it really is, like, distressing to their mental health. It affects their mood. It also actually manifests a lot as procrastination. You know, I think people assume that perfectionists are the people who actually get it all done and, like, do it all perfectly, and that's really not the case. Perfectionism is, like, the mindset where you expect that of yourself, and then inevitably when we fall short, because we all do, because no one's perfect, that feels, you know, unbearable, and it's, like, really upsetting. So that's something I see with a lot of folks, you know, whether or not they have an eating disorder.
Yeah, I'm over here self-diagnosing myself right now. Not to downplay.
Yeah, a lot of people are surprised.
Yeah, not to downplay anyone who actually is really, really, really struggling with that. It is all relative, though, and I'm sure we all have some degrees of that, especially in this day and age. I mean, the pressure that we have in so many ways.
Yeah. Absolutely. There is one other, if you want to talk about this, something that, you know, comes up a lot in the vegan community and sort of people trying to convert people to veganism is the, like, the motivation of health, right? And there are all the documentaries about, like, how people went vegan and it cured all of their ailments and they lived forever. And I think that's a dangerous and slippery slope. You know, if health is your goal, like, there are a lot of ways that you can pursue that that don't entail going fully vegan, right? And you can add in some more plants or some more movement and engage in other health promoting behaviors. And so I think when we use health as a reason for going vegan, that sort of encourages, like, more extreme behaviors. And so again, if it's not really motivated by ethics, I think we run the risk of encouraging extreme behaviors, which can easily become an eating disorder.
Yeah. When you say it like that, that just, my brain sometimes goes back into theater mode from what I've learned in acting school and stuff, which seems like it has nothing to do with this, but, you know, the stakes are higher, I guess is what I'm saying. Like, that's a scenario where the stakes get really high. You're like, oh, that's the pinnacle of health. I want that. I need that. And I have to do everything I can do to get to that. And that, like you said, yeah, absolutely can be dangerous because it just varies. Yeah. It varies what you can do or who you are and what health really is for you or what it looks like or doesn't look like. And yeah, I'm curious if you're able to talk about this, like, can you tell us, for those who might be interested, what would a program or a session with you or with Homebody Therapy be like?
Sure. So individually, I usually start with kind of a more structured session in which we go through your history, basically the history of your relationship with your body and food. And so that's exploring, like, the earlier messages and influences from your caregivers and people around you that shaped how you came to relate to your body and to bodies in general. And we sort of trace a history from that point up until today and what behaviors you're engaging with related to food and body. That sort of helps frame the rest of our work moving forward, which ends up looking a little different for everyone. For some people, there really needs to be more structured nutritional support. For some people, it's more just working on healing body image, internalized fat phobia. I also have a group, I have a couple groups, but I have one specifically for vegans interested in divesting from diet culture and disordered eating. I call it the Vegan at Every Size group.
Yeah, I've seen that on your Instagram.
Yeah, so I'm hoping to start another cycle of that in the new year. And that is sort of just a space to hopefully fill, you know, bridge this gap that we were talking about between, like, the eating disorder treatment world and vegans. And that was really great. I just ran it once so far, but I think really just offered more of an opportunity for community and space for folks to explore these topics with other people going through it. Yeah, so that was really neat.
That's amazing. Yeah, we'll keep our eyes peeled for when that gets around to relaunching for the new year. Do you typically get a lot of vegans that come to you for therapy, or do you seek out, you know, vegan clients, or what's kind of the mix of people and lifestyles you get?
So it's funny. I only, like, sort of recently went public as a vegan because I felt really sort of nervous about disclosing that within the Health at Every Size community and the eating disorder treatment community because of sort of all that skepticism that we were talking about. Yeah. And I am someone in a smaller body, and I just don't like to center my body or what I eat because I don't want folks to assume that's
the best way.
That that's the best way, or that they, if they eat like me, they'll look like me, because the truth is we could all eat and move the exact same ways and still look completely different, because body diversity is real and wonderful. So in general, I just try not to talk about it too much. But it felt important to mention. So I probably only started talking about it a few months ago. So I don't yet have a lot of clients who have come to me for that outside of the group that I ran. But I do have like one or two that happened to be vegan. And of course, I knew that about them. And I think once they knew that about me, it actually really added another level of like comfort and safety in the relationship, because they knew that I wasn't judging their food choices. So.
Right, right. I can imagine that that would be, yeah, comforting and almost just a little more like, oh, I trust this process now a little bit more, because like, I know they're not thinking in the back of their head like, oh, the silly vegan or whatever it is.
Totally. Yeah.
Yeah. And it seems like there's a lot more, maybe I'm just being more exposed to it now that I've been able to like see more through the grapevine, but there seems to be a lot more RDs and therapists who are vegan themselves and who are promoting, not promoting veganism, but promoting just, you know, body neutrality or body liberation or body autonomy or fat positivity or health at every size. And it's just a really refreshing take in this world. Just I think maybe it's a new generational like revelation almost, or at least it's gone a little more public, a little more mainstream, in a good way, I think.
Yeah, I totally agree. I think the more of us that talk about it and connect with each other, you know, community is always like the most important part, I think, of any healing process. So I think it's really, really great that we're all talking about it more and connecting.
Mm-hmm. Just for a couple fun questions, I saw in your bio that you like visiting national parks, practicing yoga, and volunteering with the Philadelphia Sinfonia Youth Orchestra.
Yeah.
So I'm curious, which national park is your favorite?
I would say Denali National Park in Alaska is my favorite so far.
Wow.
That was, yeah, a really incredible experience.
That's a bucket list park for me.
That's a great one.
Is there one that you really want to get to you haven't been to yet?
There are a lot of them, actually, that I have yet to get to. Yellowstone is up there. Hoping, you know, if everything permits with the pandemic and everything, maybe next summer to try to get out there.
Yeah.
Have you been?
I've been to Yellowstone. I actually don't live too far from it because I'm just down in Denver.
Right.
So I think it's about 6 hours, tops. But yeah, I actually recently went there, and it's always felt a little underwhelming to me until this last trip. And I don't know, seeing the bison so close in such big, I don't know what their groups are called, but clusters of themselves.
Yeah.
It was really magical. There's something magical about it. I'm not the biggest fan of like the geological wonders of Yellowstone. I did cry when I saw Old Faithful spout though. Mm. So that was nice. That was cool. I don't think I'd ever actually seen that happen. But no, Yellowstone is definitely so popular and it is worth exploring. All parks are worth just like getting in there a few times. Yeah. I think the Grand Canyon is one of my favorites though.
Oh yeah. Grand Canyon's great. I also, this isn't a U.S. national park, but I really want to get to Jasper in Canada.
Oh, where is that in Canada?
It's the Canadian Rockies. So it's like the same sort of mountains as Banff, but a couple hours further and a lot less touristy.
Oh my God, Banff, another one that's up there on the list. We actually took a big trip up to recently, my partner and I, through Wyoming, Montana. We went into Glacier, and we brought our passports just in case the border was potentially going to be open, but of course it's not, and had to come back down. But we came down through Idaho, hit up some hot springs, dipped into Salt Lake City, and then came back over to Colorado. So it was fun. We tried to be more isolated and like away from society, so it was a really good chance to do that before diving into some work and all of that.
But I love Colorado too. I'm actually licensed to practice in both Pennsylvania and Colorado.
I was also going to say that. Yeah, you can work virtually or remotely with us out here if you want to.
Yeah, and my groups are open to anyone anywhere, but individually Yeah, I work with folks in both PA and Colorado. Perfect. I just love it out there.
That's perfect. Yeah. And I need to still explore more of this wonderful state. The Rockies. I can't get enough of the Rocky Mountains. Also curious, in what capacity do you volunteer with this youth orchestra? Do you play an instrument?
So I did play an instrument. I'm on the board of directors there, but I am an alum of the orchestra. I played string bass.
Wow.
Classical upright bass growing
up. That's what my boyfriend plays.
Really?
Yeah, he's an upright acoustic bass player.
Oh my gosh.
Yeah.
That's so cool.
That's amazing.
Yeah, that is so cool. Yep. So I played bass. I was in the orchestra in middle school and high school, and then came back on as a board member when I moved back to Philly 6 years ago from New York. So
that's awesome. And I'm a music nerd. I play trumpet.
Oh, cool.
And so I'm always like, oh, orchestras,
yeah,
bands, symphonies.
I love it. Me too. Yeah.
Yeah. That's gotta be so fun. How nice. That's awesome. It's so important to have hobbies outside of work.
Yes.
That's something I think our generation struggles with. And yeah.
Yeah, it's been a really nice way to stay connected to that part of myself, because I don't play anymore, but...
Mm-hmm. That's awesome. So if we want to hear more from you, can you drop some other podcasts that you've been on so that we can give them a listen?
Yeah, that's a great question. I recorded an episode recently on the Meat Busters podcast, which was really nice.
I've never heard of them. Are they, like... vegan podcast?
Yeah, I think they're relatively new, but
cool.
It's a vegan podcast. And I also recorded an episode recently on the Fuck It Diet podcast, which should be out, I think, by the end of this month. And I've been on Intuitive Bites with Kirsten Ackerman, so... Yeah, those are
awesome.
Yeah, still getting into the podcast game and figuring it out, but it's been really fun.
That's awesome. Well, I'm sure that they appreciate your time, and I know I appreciate your time to take to talk with us. We will be sure to link all of your social media and your contact information for you. Yeah, and if you don't have anything else to say, I guess we'll wrap it up.
Sounds good. I really appreciate you. I appreciate your amazing podcast and the community you've created. So really excited to be here.
Oh, I'm just an adoptive mother. I took over from Eden and Joelle, so I'm I'm just keeping it going, keeping the nurturing moving, and it's just a pleasure to get to talk to some awesome people and people who are professionals in their field. And I know that, like, it's something that there's always been an interest to learn more about in this community, and I know that I learned a lot, so thanks again.
Thank you.
We'll talk to you all in the Chubb Club very soon. Bye, everyone. If you or a loved one are struggling with an eating disorder or mental illness, you can text CONNECT to 741741. Resources are linked in the description below this episode. Follow Jenny at homebodytherapy.com and Homebody Therapy on Instagram and Facebook. Ready for more? Don't worry, the Chubby Coffee Break mini episode is coming out this Friday, and next week we've got another guest lined up for you. Follow us at Vegan Chub Club on Twitter and at The Vegan Chub Club on Instagram and Facebook, and join the Facebook group by searching for The Vegan Chub Club. We'll talk to you soon.